Well, here we are on the early in the second full day of our brief session. Face-to-face lineage of the heart. And what I'd like to talk today, what I'd like to examine and think about together today is faith. Not the faith of something other than ourself or in something other than ourself, but faith in our full and complete nature. And how we approach faith and experience faith, how it fuels our practice. The first day, very often we're running on coffee and getting settled, getting here, getting away from, landing. But the second day, after the second night of perhaps some dreams or not, we may become aware of the opening of our more shadowy, usually less available inner voices, fears, images, memories, quandaries. We can begin to experience difficulties in our practice, difficulties either physically. Physical pain starts to be more insistent, or emotionally, or attention becomes really jumping around. Or else, we can begin to experience a kind of sweet deepening. All of these experiences are what we encounter. Anything that comes up is to be seen as a rich treasure that practice allows us to work with, to become aware of. We can become aware of our discouragement or self-criticism. We can be plagued by fantasies of escaping. I remember a number of sessions where I was almost thinking that I wish I got appendicitis because I would have to leave. But the beauty of the session ritual is that we're all here together. And we all support each other to stay put. Because what we're confronting is our general tendency and habits of avoidance and fleeing from inner and outer conditions. We're getting to know them in all of their many faces and subtleties, encountering all of the shadow that we don't identify with, that we want to get rid of. The shadow that comes to us in our dreams, in our moods, in our inner voices, in our impulses. Whether we like it or not, we become aware. Which is a great gift, to be able to be aware and not enact. It's also one of the reasons why it's so important to, at the very start, cultivate loving kindness. To help our spirit and to help us take heart. To help us hold steady in a high wind. the high wind of discouraging thoughts and self-criticism, the skeptical voices about practice, about our ability to do this practice, to wake up, about the whole territory of our lives and our self. So learning to hold steady is part of the discipline of practice. There is a koan that we sometimes receive early in practice that goes, be an old tree in a high wind, which really is our condition, the high winds of our moods, impulses, and habits. So we develop in this practice together the discipline that will see us through the entire process of waking up and becoming open to our true nature, whole and complete, including everything. The discipline that helps us look into appearances, and not be swept away by strong feeling states, but instead coming to know them for what they are. Oh yes, this is sadness. Yes, this is skepticism. This is doubt. This is profound sorrow or remorse. And even more specifically, this is holding back. We get to see all the ways we hold back, not only in our seated practice in Zazen, but in every activity. There's a teaching in this tradition about great doubt, great faith, and great determination. Great doubt as opposed to, well, small doubt or skeptical doubt, worried doubt. They point to different aspects of what we encounter that we would label doubt. So the doubt that we ordinarily deal with that sweeps us and pulls us and pushes us around during practice, we can call small doubt, skeptical doubt, which comes out of an attachment to a very narrow idea of a separate self. It's part of the separate self. The separated self, the self that we get stranded in, the self that gets lonely, very lonely. It's a narrow idea of who we are. It's where all the shoulds are held and enacted and suffered with. They're kind of like a thief. They steal our zest for life, our willingness to step up. So I'd like to offer a poem. It's very ordinary language about this particular experience and what comes after. The floor is cold, the ground frozen. This is the bottom all the world's seeds have wound down. And just when the stem of my spine seems to have dried up and become a stalk on which my head merely nods, Just when I think nothing is left alive, the bare branches of the trees rise up, beckoning. And it isn't simply that I want to go out to them. They also want me to come. Come, they say in their motion, in their scraping of branch against branch, like a woman rubbing her hands together. Come with us, where we are going, walk with us, up into the wind. The wind of our faith in the great way. The wind in our aspiration, our longing. To be wholly ourselves, fully alive. So we need to keep going to allow all the energies to flow through awareness. Sitting and clearing, first one moment and then the next. Moment by moment, whatever comes up. Self-emptying is the truest functioning of Zazen. Self-emptying. The surest gift of our practice. And presence itself. The practice of presence itself is one and the same with self-emptying. Emptying this constricted self, this self of misidentifications and dearly held beliefs about our limits. I am this, I'm not that. I can do this, I can't do that. If we don't understand our true nature, we impose a path, the path of a me, from the outside, which is paved with concepts and conclusions. Conclusions about who I am, who me is. And we become prisoners to our path. Once we begin to open and notice openness and changing, and the mystery, the surprise, the spontaneous offerings of our life, this ongoing generative moment. In just this breath, moment, after breath, after breath. Once we understand that the nature of all things, of ourself, our life, continues to flow, is dependently arising, dependent on all the momentary, ever-changing conditions. Once we begin to directly see that, not just understand it intellectually, we can trust in this teaching of Buddha nature. We begin to trust the Tao, the way. We are people of the way. And with this practice, a life in true faith naturally develops. It naturally flows. There's nothing we have to reach for. There's a kind of gladness and trust, even in difficulties. It brings up the question, what is this? What is this? And we no longer privilege one thing over another, but instead trust in what is arising, whatever it is. We no longer privilege bliss over sobriety, though though we may enjoy the specificity of these mind states, we no longer privilege comfort over restlessness, but instead receive both, experience both, wholly. In the chant, affirming faith in mind, there's a line, "The great way is not difficult for those who do not pick and choose." The great way is not difficult for those who do not pick and choose. It relieves us of a great burden. When we can just directly look into whatever it is we're experiencing, we're no longer a prisoner of our personal agendas and ideas and preferences. Because in so many ways, things are way beyond our choosing. Becoming minutely aware when they arise, we can return to the root of the experience in this present moment, in this ever-emerging moment, with all of our life juice available, nothing tied up in resistance and separating. On the way to that wonderful day, that wonderful freedom, we also include and get so aware of resistance, because that's the bell ringing, right here, right here. What is this? What is this obstruction that is so difficult? Faith, trusting in not knowing what comes next, but being willing to be open to whatever it is, because it's going to happen anyway. This is very practical. This Zen path is a very practical approach to life. Just as the atmosphere sustains the earth, faith sustains our practice. And the ancestors, the lineage of the heart, were all people of profound faith. So what did they have faith in? Well, we could say the nature of mind. Now, mind is a word we use in many different ways. There's the thinking mind, which is part of a much more open mental and intuitive mind, the mind that goes beyond the senses. And it is that mind that when we sit regularly, when we do this practice, we are encouraging ourselves to sensitize to invite in, which requires not knowing, not being so fixed in the thinking mind, not privileging thinking over non-thinking, knowing over non-knowing. And then faith in the fact that we all have the possibility to awaken to our true self, our whole and complete and open life, regardless of our intelligence, regardless of our early conditioning. We all do it in our own ways, and we all confront our own obstacles, which have been conditioned. How wonderful, we have conditions to work with. Also, faith in the practice itself as the power of concentration increases. Various states occur. Various states occur which begin to open places that have been shut tight. And with our practice, we know this is a state, this too is temporary, but it is a gift. And therefore, we have these practices, the four foundations of mindfulness. No matter what experience we're having, we can consider it in relation to how the body is experiencing, the physicality, the energetic experience, the story that is being told in this experience, the conclusions that we're drawing, the mood. And whether we like it or don't like it. And then also we come to faith in the timing. We have, all of us already have had a long life. And when the time is right and the effort has been sufficient and sustained, enlightened awareness naturally blooms because it is our natural mind. We open. And this opening is quite a disillusionment. It's a disillusionment. Whatever the illusions are that have been narrowing our view, that have been keeping us fixed in one particular view, become swept away in a fell swoop or bit by bit. And we come to understand with this opening of enlightened awareness, we get to come to understand what is separate about the self and what is not separate about the self. There are different views. And then all of the Dharma teachings begin to be these treasures and that help us clarify our understanding. But it comes from our direct experience. It cannot be understood with the mind. So we should consider our own faith as a vow that practice sweeps us into a great vow of awakened ones who've come before us and shown us the way. Our vows are not personal, although we may have some, but there is a great vow that has been rolling along through the ages, through millions of lives, that has now touched all of us. And that vow is infused with a sensation of faith, with an intuitive knowing. Consider that the strength of the great determination of the ancestors is rooted in compassion. So that brings us to considering our own motivation for practice. It's important to ask, how determined am I to experience and express the full contours of an awakened path through life, through the particular life that I have received, through my own body, my own experiences, my own history? How determined am I to see them as the true way, that can be expressed and help others to awaken, help relieve the suffering of others. We're all different. We all have our own gifts to uncover in this practice. It's not always what we think. We can be teaching for a long time thinking that my teaching has to be one particular thing, and I always fall short. This is a personal confession here. I always fall short. But then on the other hand, I do my best. And that's true of all of us. We can't know the reach of our own contribution. All we can know is our own great determination and the strength of vow. Another way to say that, which is much more ordinary, is how interested are you in this as a way of life? Because that's the sweetest and juiciest motivation, is interest. So as you're sitting on the cushion, if you're struggling, you know, that struggling is part of it, but it's also all tied up with shoulds about practice. We can always change to ask ourselves, what am I really interested in right now? Like I've had in the course of my practice over the years, profound pain. And at one point I discovered that if I cried out internally, Kuan Yin, come and help me right now, that suddenly, first of all, I always got help in some odd way. And secondly, my practice became much more interesting. I brought magic into it. Now, there's something magical about interest. So looking into, when you're looking in your motivation, we want to help others. We want to be benevolent beings in the world, I assume. We all share that. But we also want to be free and at ease. The 16 precepts that we renewed on Wednesday turn us in the right direction and help us with our vow to awaken in the ordinary run of everyday life. We can always consult them for guidance. If we have a small vow, then we practice with a small perspective. If we accept our inheritance, this great vow for awakening, then we can open the gates of our hearts and life energies to benefit ourselves and all beings. When we accept this inheritance, we can relax and live a life in true faith, trusting our own life to fuel and provide. Faith is a fuel which is much more refined than oil. And it's much more sustainable and sustaining. Faith transmogrifies our small and limited doubt and hesitation into a wide open, personal, universal. Caring. An offering that we pass on through our best efforts. It's how we manifest our faith. And it has implications for how we experience all of the vagaries of our lives. An attitude of faith allows us to discover deep equanimity Equanimity comes naturally when we're not determined to have things a certain way. When we're not determined to have certain things things a certain way, the way that they're not. Like, the toilet overflowed. What's to be done? Mop it up. No suffering necessary. It just corrects our course. We need to flush each time. That can be used as a model for everything in our life. When anything comes along, what's to be done? Just whatever is needed and what can be learned from it. It's so simple, really. A friend of mine learned a while back that he has a year to live because of a blood cancer that he's developed. This is a person of great faith and long practice. And a tremendous equanimity. He's continually, even now, really alive and loving, and even joyful when his pain isn't too great. And when it is, he's patient. He told me his method. He says, I just narrow my attention to a breath-by-breath approach. He said that complaining, which he did a while back, just and trying to separate himself from the condition that is a fact, undermined the benefit to him of the very precise and insistent practice that his pain is. And he said, it's a sesheen. It's a sesheen. How wise to see it as an opportunity, as something that can be of value. This is really practical wisdom, the fruit of the enlightenment of this way. We become very practical. Even when his life force is ebbing, he's practicing for the sake of others. He's not alone, not nearly. And hearing about this, we are benefiting from his practice. So yesterday, Sato mentioned Layman Pang, the family practitioner, the ordinary layman. Here's a verse from Layman Pang. My daily affairs are quite ordinary, but I'm in total harmony with them. I don't hold on to anything, don't reject anything. Nowhere an obstacle or conflict. Who cares about wealth and honor? Even the poorest thing shines. My miraculous power and spiritual activity? Drawing water and carrying wood. This is the Dharma practical enlightenment. In the human realm, because we don't understand our true nature, we can impose a path from outside and become prisoners to that path. Once we understand that the nature of all things, ourself included, our life included, is dependently arising, we can have trust in Buddha nature or the Tao or our life just as it is, not privileging one thing over another. So a lineage of the heart is a path of benefit. In the Vimalakirti Sutra, it says, if you yourself are in bondage, you cannot release others from bondage. Therefore, it's our responsibility to take full heart and practice like our hair's on fire. This is a phrase that's often used. Practice like your hair's on fire, even if you don't have any hair. Nothing else is going on during Sesshin. We're here to practice like our hair's on fire. When sitting, when working, while eating, while lying down, not lapsing for a moment, staying totally present. And whenever you forget, noticing, oh, I just got caught thinking. And then coming right back to right here and now, just as it is. Present just as you are in your ordinary life. There's a koan which refers to this practice of no gaps, not drifting into reverie, but noticing the content of our mind. And whenever we become aware, coming back immediately to the unification of the moment, the unified present moment. The koan is, all things return to the one. What does the one return to? I want to set that to music and begin to sing it, so that I love to bring it to mind over and over. What does the one return to? We can get very, very heady in trying to figure out the answer to that koan. But instead, let's just all take a breath. What does the one return to? Here's a poem. As the cat climbed over the top of the jam closet, first the right forepaw, carefully, then the hind stepped down into the pit of the empty flower pot. As the cat climbed over the top of the jam closet, first the right forepaw, carefully, then the hind stepped down into the pit of the empty flower pot. An ordinary moment. Inspiring, subtle, simple, complicated, ordinary. We awaken not just to this material world, the world of matter and words and symbols, but to the precise and direct and complete and emergent appearance, disappearance of this ongoing moment. Just in this moment, only this moment. So this Sesshin opportunity is so rare, to be able to cease our daily responsibilities and need to know and keep track of and fixate, and just be able to pay attention to the minute infinity of intrinsic awareness and all that fills it moment by moment. Each moment arising spontaneously and complete. We're foolish to settle for a small and self-centered practice, because the universe is boundless and we're creatures of it. This is a poem by Ezra Pound. Do not move. Let the wind speak. That is paradise. Flowing in this ongoing generative moment. Opening into whatever occurs next. Occurrences scattering always in their own directions. Aware. Somewhere near you. Something unborn. And always beginning. Just now.